Right on. Happy Vancouver, happy Thursday, and happy spring. You're listening to the Pedal Revolutionary Show on 101.9 FM, CITR, out of the University of British Columbia, where people are learning and hopefully growing. I hope it's been a great couple weeks for everybody. I just got back from holiday, so I feel pretty fresh and bursting like a blossom. And I'd like to just say that I hope everyone's having a nice bicycle commute from work today. And those of you who are not working, even better. I hope you're out riding your bikes anyway. So today we're going to be talking about a couple of things. One, we're going to have full disclosure. And then we're going to be talking a little bit about some bike tips for folks who are maybe just getting back into riding for the spring or who maybe are just even getting into riding. We're also going to be talking about the death of cars and how it looks. So I just, in the interest of full disclosure, I would like to say that I think I was in driver's services a few months ago and I was renewing my driver's license. And someone stopped in who has really only seen me on critical mass. And was extremely shocked to see me in driver services, not with a placard and not busting heads. And I would like to say that I do have a class 4 license. I have been a professional driver for a number of years. I have driven a 5-ton truck, a dump truck, limousines, buses, and I had at one point a 2-day adventure with a farm lawnmower in rural Alberta. So certainly I... for those folks who feel guilty about driving on occasion, I want you to know that a lot of what I hope people take away from this show is a way to kind of practice harm reduction. It is relatively difficult at this point to get by without either touching something that was produced with fossil fuels or driving in some kind of people-moving machine every once in a while. And so I do hope that people kind of try to do the best that they can, and I think a lot of times cyclists, especially those who ride all year round, are living by example, and I think we do need to make conscientious decisions about how we live and be aware that our choices have implications. And so again, I do encourage everybody to not feel overwhelmed by the work that there is to do, because there is a lot of it. We were talking a little bit last show with a number of people, and I remember Fred Bass brought up, we were talking about propaganda posters from World War II, and there was, of course, a big movement for conservation and energy, particularly energy conservation. And there was one sign in particular that he brought up that said, "Is this trip necessary?" And I remember the sign with there's like a really nice old 1944 Ford, and there's a guy driving it in his hat, and in the seat next to him there's a ghostly outline of Hitler, and it says, "If you ride alone, you ride with Hitler." So we're in an era when, of course, we don't have an outside enemy. We're kind of wrestling with ourselves a lot of the time. So, you know, I would also like to encourage people this summer, as, you know, it gets a bit hotter and construction goes into full swing. The RAV line is still continuing, and I would encourage people to exercise caution when they're riding their bicycles near Cambie in that zone, because drivers are extremely short-tempered. But as you know, as the summer heats up, I would encourage cyclists out there on the roads to practice the fine art of patience. I think we really have a great opportunity again to live by example, and if we treat people like enemies, then of course they're going to think that they're enemies and they will be unable to join us at some point. So inside a lot of cars in this city, you know, there are these little fences and people are sitting on them, perhaps. So I think we should try to think of ways to get them off the fence and get them into the still somewhat fresh air, and perhaps even better on a bicycle. We have, for those of you who are perhaps driving in cars, listening to this at this point, I'm sure that a lot of people would agree that the culture that is at present, it seems to be the way that people interact on the roads is perhaps one that doesn't reflect the best things about our society. So I would encourage everyone to try to bring bike culture back to the roads, because you're not riding around in an armored vehicle. It's something that's social and fun, and people can say hello to their neighbors on their way to work. We can certainly strive to improve ourselves and our communities. There's a whole grid stretching across all the continents where neighborliness has perhaps been ground to a fine powder. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, this has brought us to a real lack of social responsibility and maybe dissuaded us from taking care of each other, because, you know, some guy cuts you off for the umpteenth time and you're going to cut off the next person in line. So let's, as cyclists, I think, you know, people are, we have to recognize that drivers are laboring under a lot of frustration. And even if it's self-inflicted, it certainly doesn't necessarily mean that they don't need our help to feel like there are other alternatives for them. So, keeping those things in mind as some guy cuts you off in his car and almost kills you, I know is really hard. And this is going to be my personal project this summer as well, to change my habits. I would like to call for an end to giving the finger in the city of Vancouver. What do you think about that, David Ripa?
Well, the end to the finger, but the finger's all we have left.
But it's not an arms race. This is the problem. We can't outgun them.
What about an end to boot prints?
I don't know what you're talking about. That was my way to let him know that I was thinking about him.
Right.
Yes. Well, I guess my problem with the finger is that I think a lot of times it's like people do it, I think, without thinking. And, you know, you watch car drivers. If you ever have the opportunity to sit down and just kind of watch a morning commute, or watch people especially if you want to get like maybe a lawn chair and go and sit at the intersection of 12th and Cambie, maybe bring some tissues, because it is it can certainly inspire despair in the human condition. The finger has some great alternatives, actually, because if you get someone the finger, then they'll just give you the finger back, and then your interaction is over, and you're not actually being subversive in any way. It's not very creative. It's kind of boring. I would suggest giving the thumbs down. That one can be very useful. You may also want to consider, for those of you who are sarcastic, the thumbs up, which can also be very effective. Sometimes blowing a kiss is really good, because it's one of those things, like, if you don't lose your sense of humor, they can't win.
Well, I find blowing the kiss as a guy very effective, because it confuses and brings in a whole bunch of other issues into the situation, and actually they drive away faster.
And it's really romantic.
Exactly.
Right? So let's all try to think of ways that we can maybe interact a bit more creatively with drivers to also show that actually, you know, I think if people go away from an interaction with a bicyclist thinking that bikers are jerks and they're just like everybody else on the road, it's not as effective as if they realize actually they're smiling and waving at me. I just did something that I know is wrong. So I think drivers then start to maybe loosen their grip on themselves and they become more receptive, and all those things are really great. You know, the way that we've kind of turned our back on individual responsibility and feelings of civil responsibility to other people has taken us as a species down some really dark roads, and fixing it is a really big job. And the good news is that we can actually multitask just by riding our bikes and going from A to B. So let's try to bring a more humane presence to the road. Now enough of me and my soapbox. Let's get into a little bit of music here before we get on with the show. So we'd like to hear a song from Heather Lev called If Cars.
When you buy a car, do you realize your money pays for things that you probably despise, like oil spills covering Alaskan land, cash in a crooked politician's hand, children dead on desert sand. So wouldn't it be nice if cars were banned? Wouldn't it be nice if cars were banned? Trees could grow upon the land, no more smog up in the sky. Let's make it happen by and by. Wouldn't it be great if streets were quiet, no car horns and engines making a riot? Think of all the time you spend in traffic jams. Wouldn't it be great if they were banned? Think of all the tax money that you owe to pay for wildland to be covered up with road, and for hospitals for people hit by cars. Wouldn't it be great if they were barred? Wouldn't it be nice if cars were banned? Trees could grow upon the land, no more smog up in the sky. Let's make it happen by and by. Cars give us jobs, you may say. They're just the good old American way. But GM doesn't care about American jobs. They send them where they're cheaper, the greedy slobs. Imagine if kids could play without fear. The drivers would hit them while drinking beer. And if you weren't stuck inside a metal cage, running people down with your road rage. Wouldn't it be nice if cars were banned? Trees could grow upon the land. No more smog up in the sky. Let's make it happen by and by. Oil companies don't seem to care if they poison the water or pollute the air. If you're in Nigeria and mention that, they're going to execute you in no time flat. We're drilling Alaskan wilderness so gallons can be 5 cents less. And the Saudi royals got rich quick and inspired terrorist lunatics. Wouldn't it be nice if the cars were banned? Trees could grow upon the land. No more smog up in the sky. Let's make it happen by and by. Greenhouse gases fill the sky. 40,000 people each year get hit by cars and die. None of those problems would be there if people had cars that they would share. If buses, trains, and bikes were everywhere, this song could go on without any end. Till you realize that your car is not your friend. We're all car addicts, let's just say no. Then those cars will have to go. Wouldn't it be nice if cars were banned? Trees could grow upon the land. No more smog up in the sky. Let's make it happen by and by. We can change things, watch and see. We will have to eventually. So let's get together, we'll work all day to make those cars go away. Won't it be nice when cars are banned? Trees can grow upon the land. No more smog up in the sky. It's gonna have to happen by and by.
And welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. My name is Ifni. I am a bicycle rider, and I'm here in the studio with David. David, how you doing today?
I'm okay.
Yeah? How's your bicycle been treating you?
I think the more appropriate question would be, how am I treating my bicycle?
Oh, okay.
And it's I owe it a lot of attention, and it's not getting it. I'm riding with a cracked rear rim and broken fenders, and I just, yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, you have quite a lovely bicycle as well, one perhaps not deserving of such treatment. You have do you want to tell people a little bit about your bike?
Well, I'm not going to claim to be a bike connoisseur, but I do have a nice Bianchi that I purchased about 6 years ago now in Victoria, used, and it's a cyclocross frame, and it's gone through many wheel sets and gears and whatnot, but it's been good to me, and it's traveled across the country twice now by bus when I've moved back and forth. But
and when you say cyclocross frame, what do you mean for people who might not know?
I'm not sure.
All the bike guys are like, oh, that's a nice cyclocross frame. And so I just say, hey, it's a cool cyclocross frame.
Okay, well, if anyone out there would like to call in and describe in more detail a cyclocross frame, you are more than welcome to. You can also compliment David on his cyclocross frame because he apparently has a very nice one. It's sea green, which is a very classic Bianchi color.
Celeste green.
Celeste green, yes. My apologies. Like, is that like celestial or like the girl? The punk girl with the green hair?
I tend to believe that it's from the Northern Lights. It's that same kind of weird green, but I'm probably very wrong.
Nice.
Because Italians don't have Northern Lights.
No, not that I know of. Not even the Northern Italians, although they are blonde. If anyone would like to call in and actually just say hello, or if you have an event out there that you would like to get out on the airwaves, or if you would like to ask any questions or make any statements about the finger or other related or unrelated topics, you can give us a call at 604-UBC-CITR. So even those of you on rotary dial will be able to call in. Bike maintenance, it might be a time that people might want to think about cleaning up their drivetrains a little bit, or cleaning up their wheels, or just even giving your bike a nice little rub down since it's weathered the storms of the wintertime. David, then how did you actually get into bicycle riding? Because I know you as well, we are talking full disclosure today, so you as well have a past that is has been heavily influenced by the automobile.
It's true. I've actually owned 17 vehicles in my short lifetime.
At once?
No, not at once. But at one time, I had 4 cars, but I worked at a scrapyard, so you could definitely have more than one car. I got into bicycling at a fairly young age because my mother never had a driver's license. And so we biked everywhere together and took the bus everywhere. So I was very used to not having a car. And we lived close to a downtown area. So it seemed kind of natural not to drive. We only drove when we needed to go to see relatives that were far off. And I'll never forget, I guess my mom is the first person that was ever into decorating bicycles. I remember she had this green Raleigh, and she was afraid that people were going to steal it, so she painted the frame black and then put sparkly purple tiger stripes all over it. And
rendering it unstealable.
Exactly, because people would be too embarrassed to ride it. And I remember I was kind of embarrassed riding with my mom when I was a kid, and now here I am riding Critical Mass and hanging out with all sorts of bicycle people that have way more crazy decorations on their bicycles.
The clown bikes, as they've been called.
Yes. So anyways, that's how I got into biking. And when I moved to Victoria in 2001 from Ontario, I just didn't need my car. Victoria reminded me a lot of where I grew up. So I lived next to a grocery store, so on and so forth. Needed to save some money. And it wasn't so much a political decision at that point as it was the second time around when I finally wrote off cars for good.
And speaking of bike decorations and theft, that is one tried and true tactic that some folks might want to try. You can uglify your bike or prettify it in an ugly way. I had a bike called the Grillo, which I got off a gentleman who used to work in film, and he just used it to get around the set mostly. So he spray painted it bright greenish, sickly yellow to not only facilitate ease of finding it, but also so that no one would ever even consider walking away with it. There is also actually going to be a bike decorating workshop weekend coming up. That's going to be just at the beginning of bike month. So if you're interested in learning or getting involved in organizing that weekend, if you know something fun that you can do with bikes, either how to wrap good handlebars, or how to make streamers out of plastic bags, or how to do knit yarn around your spokes, anything like that, please visit the website BicycleBee, so that's bicyclebee.blogspot.com. We're going to be having a barbecue for those 2 days as well, and we're going to be having potlucks to kind of plan that as the date approaches. So if you'd like to get involved and help out, you're more than welcome to. So bike decorating, and let's talk more about cars.
Okay,
David, I want to know what happens to cars when they die. That's what I want to know. And before you answer that question, because I know you certainly have the ability to, I just want to let everybody know that in the year 2000, we had 21 million licensed drivers as of the year 2000, and they drove their commercial and personal vehicles 319 billion kilometers.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
and
pretty impressive.
It's like the word interesting. Interesting can mean something bad or it can mean something good. So yes, it's very impressive. there are these stats come out of Ontario, and it says approximately 500,000 vehicles per year are not re-renewed for the road. So either they're wrecked in accidents or sold outside the province, or they're disposed of or gotten rid of in some savory or unsavory fashion. So what happens to these things when they die? Because we see a lot of them living.
Well, perhaps first I should tell the listeners that I've been working in the automotive industry for about 11 years, and a lot of that was in automotive recycling, or scrap yards, if you want, junk yards, whatever. I've done everything from dismantling vintage Mercedes-Benz by hand to sort of your normal scrapyard with a crusher and forklifts and all that jazz. That was near sort of the end of my automotive career. But I don't know how many people are familiar with the process, but usually it begins with a car that you don't want anymore, and you go through the yellow pages looking for a junkyard, and usually the ads will say something like, my name's Ed, and I buy cars for $100 to $200, and you know, they call, and you know, the telephone conversation would usually, from when I used to buy cars, would be pretty quick. I got this piece of crap out of my driveway, and how much can I get for my 78 Ford or whatnot? And you always kind of start low at $50, and most people are happy with that. It's a case of beer for the weekend. Well, at least in Ontario it is. And off you go. There are some people that knew the value of their car a lot better, and so you would, you know, haggle on the phone. But in the end, you always got your car, and you'd send your tow truck out, or they'd bring it in with CAA. If they brought their own cars in, we'd pay a bit more. So that's a good tip there.
Mm-hmm. And let's also let people know that we're talking about the recycling and scrap industry in Ontario, which is a little bit different from British Columbia, from what I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, the procedures are obviously the same, but because ICBC is involved out here, the price of scrap, like purchasing at auction, like the vehicles themselves, is a lot more money than Ontario, and therefore the price of used parts in BC here are much more expensive than Ontario, like drastically. So I worked out here in recycling for a little bit, and it was night and day difference. Also, I find, especially closer to Vancouver, the environmental standards are a bit better than back out east.
That must be such an impediment to business.
Oh, yes.
For folks.
it's a volume issue, though, too. BC, you see a lot less cars coming in every day to the scrapyard than you do out in Ontario. The yard that I ran, we'd see about 30 cars a day. The yard I worked out here in Abbotsford saw maybe one, two a day.
Is that because of population? Is that because the weather here is a bit more forgiving?
Nope, all ICBC.
It's all ICBC.
Yeah.
So how does it work then exactly with ICBC?
I'm not sure entirely, but they would be selling cars from accidents and trying to recoup their costs from payouts.
Right. So if I'm a person who has a car that I don't want in BC, I would, generally speaking,
sell it privately to a scrapyard. But I find that didn't happen too often, or at least the yard that I was working at was more late model stuff.
I'd like to hear about the crusher. I'm really interested in the crusher. And I'm sure a lot of people run here about cars getting...
Well,
subjected to the crushing treatment. Is that like a spa for cars?
Definitely not. I had a lot of misconceptions about the crusher when I first got into the industry. I had this sort of cartoon idea of this little small cube that came out after it got crushed. But really, a crusher, first of all, usually is not a permanent installation. It's moved around by truck. So that scrapyard owners usually own more than one yard, and it's more economical to move the crusher from yard to yard when it's needed. The crusher basically is a large, heavy plate with hydraulic rams that press down on the car and basically flattens it. It goes down first and then rocks left and then right, so it sort of tries to crush it smaller and smaller. But basically it makes these flat cars, I'd say about a foot high, depending on what kind of car it is. Like if it's an armored car, good luck. It's not going to crush the same way a Ford Festiva does, let's say. And so you keep adding cars, and you can stack about six cars to what we call a stack. And
is that about the size of one car then?
No, it's a bit taller than one. Yeah, again, it depends on what cars you're putting in, and there's also like a Tetris method to making these bundles. Actually, bundles is a better word. You would have, say, hood first going to the left, and then you put that in with your big loader, crush it. Then the hood would go on the trunk end of the last car, so they're going back and forth, so they don't kind of peel apart when you pick them out of the crusher.
Well, I know you've got some really good stories, and I want to hear more about the crusher, and I know you have some stories that relate directly to the crusher. I'm very fascinated by the crusher. I just like even saying the word crusher. But let's listen to a bit of a song, and then we'll come back and talk to you a little bit more. So why don't we hear, how about we hear a song that maybe we can imagine, instead of having these big, huge fields of cars that are just waiting to be crushed, why don't we imagine they could be used for farmland? So how about Got the Farmland Blues? Welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. My name is Ifni. I'm talking to the lovely and talented David here in the studio with me. And today we're talking a little bit about being good neighbors on the road and also crushing cars, which I think, do they make any sounds when they get crushed?
You know, I never really listened to the sounds in the scrapyard. All you could hear was the cat engine firing up when you went to go press it down. Actually, the crusher, by the way, runs on remote control. So when you're in the cab of a John Deere loader, you just kind of point at the crusher, and it's like an on-off switch, and there's a rock button. And so when you went to fire it up, it would fire up the revs of the engine, so all you'd hear is... and you would know that the crusher was going down, even in the office, like 4 acres away.
Okay, well, oh, and by the way, I should mention that Got the Farmland Blues was performed by the Carolina Tar Heels. Okay, well, so let's talk a little bit about, maybe before we get back to talking about the crusher, the process of how a car, like someone brings it in and they don't want it anymore, and you give them money for it and they go on their way. And what happens to the car from that point? Do you just directly put it into the crusher, or?
No, you'll have somebody from the office usually go out and take a look at the car and decide whether or not it's worth keeping around. Maybe the parts are valuable, or it's a common car. Like, you know, if you have no Ford Tempos, you want to keep a couple, that kind of thing. So you'd spray paint a number on it for inventory control purposes, jot down serial numbers, whatnot. Any good scrapyarder knows the best time is when a car comes in is you pick through it and you find, like, on average, a car is about $5 of loose change floating around, and you find Zippo lighters, and you find all sorts of things in cars, actually, because sometimes the cars that we got were from cars that were pulled at parking lots, or, you know, on Broadway when they start pulling cars at 3 o'clock, that kind of thing. If it sat for 6 months at the tow yard, we'd get the cars. So they're like little time capsules. We found a prosthetic leg one time, a baby jar of hash oil, all sorts of just really bizarre things, antiques, all sorts of things. So after it kind of gets picked through, it either gets put in a row, and usually a yard is divvied up by manufacturer. And the ones that are absolute junk gets, well, what we did was we sprayed it with a Red X, and then it got put back to the pile. And the pile was this just massive heap of cars. But before it goes into the pile, the one thing that's supposed to happen is the battery is supposed to come out before it ever gets moved. And there's a very good reason for moving the battery, and that's a yard fire. A lot of times, if a battery slips through, or maybe somebody threw their battery in the trunk of the car, like they were cleaning out their garage or something like that. When you throw a car in the pile, things get crushed, especially the hood. And if the hood, which is metal, comes down and contacts the positive and negative on the battery, you get sparking, and all of a sudden, whoosh, you got a pretty serious fire on your hands. And in the 2 years that I ran the yard, I never saw a pile fire. I saw lots of car fires, but a pile fire, never. And once a pile fire starts, I've been told a very scary experience.
And I can't imagine it's a pretty sight. I mean, you're burning there would be tires that would be burning in there, and all sorts of fuel and all sorts of fluids. And
yeah, you run away.
Everybody run away.
So car goes to the pile, and then you have a processor in a processing area, and usually it's the dirtiest job of the yard, and I wouldn't even want my worst enemy to do it. You basically grab a car, you put it on the stands, and you drain the gasoline by using a pickaxe, or, you know, and you slam it into the bottom of the gas tank. So
you just hatchet the gas tank?
Yeah, you know, like those, like a pickaxe. It's like a long spiky thing.
Oh, okay.
And you just jam it up into the gas tank. So it starts pouring out the gas into a bucket on the ground. Then you take the same device, slam it into the transmission case to release the transmission fluid. Then you cut your rad hoses and drain that into a bucket. And you're supposed to, a car is supposed to be totally released of all fluids. Like here in BC, the yard I worked at was definitely more cleaner. They had a vacuum system which sucked everything dry, and it kept the floor pretty clean. And that way, when the car went back out to the yard and sat in the rain and so on, it wouldn't drain its fluids into the ground. In Ontario, there's not really that practice going on. So you get these sort of archaic, like
dripping,
and the wind's blowing all the oils around it. It's pretty messy and not very good for the environment. So once it's drained of all its fluids, It gets the catalytic converter cut off because they're worth quite a bit of money. And the rat...
And for folks who might not know, what's a catalytic converter?
A catalytic converter, or a CAT, is a piece of the exhaust system. It was introduced in the late 70s to cut down on emissions. It's basically a honeycomb of platinum that grabs unburnt fuel and kind of traps it in there. The platinum in there is worth quite a bit of money, and so we always cut them off. A guy from the States came up and bought them, and you know, we get at least $20 American per cat. So you cut that out. You would yank the rad out for the aluminum, condenser for the aluminum again, and take all four tires off, and then it'd be ready for crushing.
Now, I know you've told me that in older cars, maybe older than 60 years old, they used to use mercury when manufacturing them. So is there some kind of different approach that's taken when you get a car in that's like really quite obsolete?
Well, actually, they used mercury for quite some time up into the 80s. They're used for the trunk and hood light switch. You know, when you open your trunk, the light comes on. Back in the day, they used mercury because it worked quite well. It worked like your thermostat. It just made a contact and boom, the light came on. But, you know, a study started to show that all this mercury was going into the groundwater and wasn't too healthy for us. So a program came out in Ontario to reclaim all these switches, and it came at no cost to the scrapyard, which is good, because anytime that there's some sort of environmental
initiative.
If the scrapyard has to pay for it, they ain't doing it. So we got these jars from the government, and we'd fill them up, and all the postage was paid, and we'd send it out. Nowadays, cars have electric switches. They're little sort of piston-driven pieces that make a contact, and the light comes on instead of using mercury.
Okay. So I'd like to ask you more questions about the crusher, David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody loves the crusher.
And I wanted to ask you, I mean, it's interesting when you talked about the personal effects that you would find in cars and things like that, because I know it does become, and especially when I was driving professionally, you spend your whole day in the cab of the vehicle, and it becomes a place that's really personalized, and it becomes a place that you know so intimately. And I think we can see people get very attached to their cars, and people get attached to their bicycles too. Let's not be hypocritical about it. But I wanted to ask you if you had any stories just about kind of people being, are people sad when they bring their cars to give them up? Are they?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, actually. The first time I saw somebody get visibly upset about leaving their vehicle, I almost started laughing, because it just, you know, they've got their hands in the chain link fence and, you know, we're dragging it away, and they're just like, oh, that was such a good car, memories and this and that. And you're just like, okay, I guess you get desensitized after crushing car after car after car. You just don't care anymore. But a pair of girls in particular come to mind. They dropped off it was like a 87 Mustang. It wasn't even a 5-liter, just a 4-cylinder. And they had all sorts of stickers on it. And you could tell that it was very, very well used and well loved. And they were asking all sorts of questions like, well, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to crush it right away? And we're like, well, probably, because we have like a million Ford Mustangs. And they're like, oh, no, please, please just, you know, put it off into the field for a while. And so we can come and visit it. And I was... at the time, you know, like, okay, you know, some nice girls, sure, I'll make them happy, you know. So sure enough, we stuck it in the back 40 with all the other Fords, and they would come every Saturday and sit in the car and smoke cigarettes and laugh and talk. And so finally, after a couple of weeks of this, I came over and I was like, is there something, you know, we can help you with? I said, it's kind of dangerous sitting in these cars here, just in case a loader comes by and decides to pick you up, you know, you're in the car and all that. You know, or is there some part you need off? I just was kind of curious as to what was going on. They're like, well,
you were making time with the pretty girl, David.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They're like, well, we can't get over our, we got, you know, rid of our car. And where I worked was, there's a lot of well-off people. So, I mean, they drove in a brand new Mustang every time to come see their old Mustang. So it didn't make any sense to me. So I said, look, can I help you get over this problem? I said, I can crush it right in front of you if you want, and then it's over. And the girl that owned the car was like, no, don't do that. And her friend was like, well, maybe this is a good idea, because, you know, we spend a lot of time here in the scrapyard now. So she was like, okay, let's do it. So I walked over to my processor, and I thought it would be more dramatic to crush it with the John Deere loader and not the actual crusher, because you can be a little more artistic with your crushing technique. So I the guy that was working for us at the time, because there's quite a high turnover of people that do processing, but he was a younger guy, and he was all over crushing this car in front of these girls. So he went and got the car, and he was quite aggressively dropped it on the ground, and he's like, "What should I do first?" And I said, "Well, let's I don't know, let's tear the hood open or something." So sure enough, these loaders are huge, like ginormous forklifts sort of, that all articulate and stuff with two big blades. So he jammed the blade down the hood and tore the hood open. And the girl was really surprised. She's like, "Oh," you know, and then he raised the forks up really high, like 20 feet in the sky, and then just slammed them down into the hood of the Mustang, which pretty much flattened it right away. And she burst into tears. She's bawling her eyes out. Her friend's like grasping her. It reminds me of one of those scenes, you know, when it was a school shooting, you got in the front page, the girls that are hugging each other on the front, that kind of intense emotion. And I was just sitting back going, "Wow, this is really pathetic," you know. And so my buddy kept going nuts on the car. He tore this engine out and flipped it over and banged it around a couple more times. And his grand finale was he picked it up, and a loader could probably put a car about 25 feet in the air. And then he just dropped the fork, so the whole car just fell from the air and smashed into the ground. And they never came back again.
Wow. It reminds me of a scene in a hospital where they pull the plug, kind of, you know. It was good to, I guess, it gave them closure. You guys gave them closure.
I guess so.
Wow. That was kind of a bike porn moment. We'll have to make a nice soundbite of that. Anyway, well, that was a very interesting story that you've got, and I think it's important for us to kind of know. I mean, we're getting to a time now. I mean, there are more cars in the world than there are people, and we're entering an era when there's going to be a lot of crushing going on. We're going to have a lot of waste more waste than we know what to do with, essentially, right? I want to ask you about where this stuff goes, but first, I want to play a song, and the song is called Motor Oil Shanty.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, your local bicycle radio. My name is Ifni, and I'm speaking today with David, and we're talking about crushing cars. So, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the whole process and what your feelings are about it, and the energy and all those things.
Okay. Well, I think one thing that's good to note is how much energy it does take to take care of cars when they're ready to be destroyed.
Senile cars,
yeah. It blows my mind away how much fuel is needed to get rid of cars, because the crusher runs on diesel, all the loaders run on diesel, the tow trucks required to go out and get the vehicles. It's just, it's amazing how much fuel we went through. But when you start, when I worked at the vintage Mercedes scrapyard, and you're taking apart a vehicle by hand, it took me about 2 weeks to take a car down to its shell. And you get to a very, very good understanding of how much materials go into a car: rubber, glass, metal, wood, all sorts of little things, you know. And when you take apart a door and you're looking at just all the intricacies, it always amazed me how much energy has gone into building cars, and then how much energy has to go in to tear them apart.
And in my understanding, about 30% of the greenhouse gas emissions that come from cars are actually in the manufacturing process.
I would believe it, and I would believe that there's got to be some sort of greenhouse emissions numbers on scrapyards, because you got a lot of heavy equipment running all day long, and especially in the wintertime, a lot of those loaders we just left running all the time when they weren't working, because you had to keep them warm.
And that's pretty standard.
Fairly standard, yeah.
So what do you think you learned from your experience in the automotive industry? What would be a lesson that you kind of took from those days, because obviously you don't work in that industry anymore, and in fact, perhaps we can say that the pendulum has swung a little bit in the other direction.
I think the lesson I learned was that in order for recycling to be truly for the betterment of our communities, that it has to be a fully transparent process, because as long as it's like private businesses doing it, at the end of the day, it's not about doing what's right for the environment or the community that the scrapyard surrounds, but what's best for your bottom line and how you're going to pay property taxes and things of that nature. The intent is all wrong. And I would say that being an environmentally aware person in the industry, I thought I could change it from within, and it's almost impossible too. There's no help from the government. The owners certainly don't want to change their ways, and really, if they're doing things by the books, they're doing it so they don't get caught, and because the fines are quite heavy that are associated with it.
Which is a good enough reason for me. I mean, as long as there is that attempt, but I see what you're saying, that it sounds like, you know, the accountability levels are what one might expect when people can operate without the scrutiny of other human beings. And, you know, and I kind of think it maybe relates to what I was saying earlier about cars versus bicycles in a kind of a psychological sense, that if we move about in a private vestibule and have a real feeling of separation from other people, it gets easier and easier to do things that are maybe more directed at our own well-being than a kind of a general sense of well-being or a general sense of responsibility.
Absolutely. And I think it'd be better if people were more involved in getting rid of their garbage on a more personal level, not like having teary-eyed goodbyes, but to actually understand the costs, not money-wise, but to the environment. A lot of scrapyards sit next to rivers and lakes and all sorts of beautiful things, and I don't care what anybody says, there's groundwater issues and things like that. You look at, in Germany, if you have a scrapyard, it has to have like 3 feet of concrete throughout the whole yard, a recycling system. They're pretty hardcore out there. Not a drop of oil hits the ground if they can't help it, but their government got very, very involved, and they don't have a lot of land. So these massive scrapyards that we romanticize about here in Canada, they don't exist there in Germany. It's to them, the idea is ridiculous. Their vintage car clubs are a lot, their mindset's a lot different here than us. It's a total different world over there.
What's the mindset of the vintage car folks over there?
Well, it's about keeping these cars rolling and together, obviously, but it's it, they don't come to the scrapyard and go through it to find parts in these old cars and stuff. They end up manufacturing a lot of their own parts new again, or make businesses out of it instead of using the older parts, because it's hard. It's getting very hard to find, like, say, Mercedes-Benz vintage parts in Germany. What they do is they go to California. There's actually a team of guys that go to California with an Airstream that they've bought and left in a scrapyard, and every summer they go there and bring 3 containers of parts back with them to Germany.
Interesting. I wanted to ask you as well, once the cars get crushed, where do they go?
Well, usually they go to a metal purchaser. Out here in BC, it would be something like Amix, where the vehicles get shredded. And then usually loaded on a barge and off to China.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, in China, they do a lot of, they have their own scrapyards as well, in addition to processing the cars that we send out there. And their own scrapyards, it says, sales of Chinese-made cars are approaching 6 million last year, and that would have been 2005. So last year, it was actually 7 million cars were sold in China. They have about 350 disassembly and recycling companies, and they disassemble and recycle about 1 million cars every year.
Whoa.
So the scale is also, again, significant, and they provide a lot of scrap and things like that. But again, they're notorious. These facilities are notorious for having bad management. The way that they dispose of hazardous materials is also not particularly great, and waste oils are usually kind of allowed to just seep into the ground, and they take the textiles. I guess that would be the upholstery,
yep,
with it, and they just kind of throw it anywhere. And there's no proper processing for it. So, and again, we're also participating in that with a variety of different types of waste going to countries like China, right? Mm-hmm. It's not only automotives, but it's also TVs and e-waste and all those kinds of things. So, food for thought. I just really like that. I'm going to replay that section later on the podcast about the car crushing and flipping it over and ripping off the hood.
I think if anybody wants to get a good idea of what a wasteful society we are, just spend a day, an hour, walk, if you can. A lot of scrapyards you can't walk in anymore, but spend an hour just walking through and looking at what's at your feet and what's all around, and the fact that nothing grows in a scrapyard. There's no animals, there's no plants, no birds, nothing. It's a dead piece of land.
And and I've been to the landfill. I've been to a few different dump facilities in the Lower Mainland, and I've certainly been to the Burns Bog. There's like this, they call it the bog. Sorry, this huge, immense landfill that takes most of the city's waste, and it's kind of disturbing. It's like a whole city of hills with big flocks of birds. Like you see this like moving cloud overhead, and you get closer and closer, and you realize like it's thousands and thousands of birds, and it's got its own ecology, which, you know, is again another statement on the state of affairs. But anyway, I really appreciate you taking the time to explain to us a little more about what happens and what will happen to more and more cars in the future as we get them off the roads.
Yeah, it's only the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, I could talk about it for hours.
Okay, well, if anyone wants to get a hold of David to hear him talk more about cars, how should they do that, David?
I don't know if I some things I can talk about.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening to the show, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. And I do want to say again about, you know, if it helps you when you're riding your bicycle and people are treating you like dirt, maybe think a little bit in your mind about the car crusher that will one day take that car and rip off its hood and flip it over. Not the person inside, but certainly, you know, the device that keeps you and that person apart, and in the mind, even in the mind of that person, that makes it hard for you to both be just regular people trying to get from A to B. And I would also remind everyone that you get a lot more flies with honey than with vinegar. So Critical Mass is coming up in tomorrow. That's 5:30 at the Vancouver Art Gallery. We ride at 6 o'clock. And there's also going to be a Critical Mass happening up at Roberts Creek. And I would encourage everyone to, even if you can't come on the Mass, just give your bike a pat, because, you know, it'll be there for you in the morning. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week. And one more time, that was Buster Bailey and his Rhythm Busters, and they were singing, they were playing Slow Jam Fizz. So let's cheers to all the slow traffic jams, because it keeps the cars at a crawl and makes us all a little bit safer. If you want to get a hold of us on the Pedal Revolutionary Show, you can spin an email to pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com and send us feedback, questions, ideas, solidarity, missives, and what? Chocolate?
Questions about the crusher.
And questions about the crusher, feel free to bring them on. Even if you just want to say, send me an email that says crusher. That's all you need to do. It'll make me happy. Okay, thanks very much, everybody. Have a good couple weeks.
Could we change the subject now? I was knocking on your ears, don't you? We were always out looking towards the future. We were begging for the past. Well, we know we had the good things, but those never seem to last. Oh, please just last. Everyone's unhappy. Everyone's ashamed. Well, we all just got caught looking at somebody else's page. Well, nothing ever went quite exactly as we planned. Our ideas held no water, but we used them like a dam. Everyone goes crazy over such and such and such. We made ourselves a pillar, we just used it as a crutch. We were certainly uncertain, at least I'm pretty sure I am. Well, we didn't need the water, but we just built that good goddamn. Ever worth it? Was there all that much to gain? Well, we knew we'd miss the boat, and we'd already missed the plane. We didn't read the invite, we just danced it our own wake. All our favorites were a plan, so we could shake, 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 shake. Tiny curtains open, and we heard the tiny clap of little hands. The tiny man would tell a little joke and get a tiny laugh from all them folks sitting, drifting around on bubbles then, thinking it was us to carry them. When we finally got it figured out that we had truly missed the boat. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. That was Modest Mouse from We Were Dead Before the Ship Even Sank with Miss the Boat, featuring that guy from The Shins, correct? Yes. I've got a really interesting show today, mostly because we've got Newman from Shades of Grey here to talk about the album review in the Georgia Strait. If you've heard me, that's Becky on the radio before. You may remember the time that they came on Mondo Trasho on Sunday nights when I was a resident visitor there. Or you may remember a few weeks ago when I featured Starlight by Wes McInnes, a member of Shades of Grey. If you guys are really good listeners today, perhaps we'll play that as well. But for now, we're going to hear some I'm From Barcelona and Enjoy the Rain. Enjoy the Rain.
Nobody can see us. It's a you and me house. I have built a tree house. I have built a tree house. Nobody can see us. 'Cause it's a you and me house. Been climbing rocks and stones, been collecting broken bones. I've been swimming across the lakes just to find this perfect place. I got lost into the woods. I've been covered up in mud. I've been going through a lot just to find this perfect spot. I have built a treehouse. I have